Hola, Caro, muy buenos días.
Buenos días, Vane, ¿cómo amaneces?
Yo todavía dormía, tú.
Por acá, no, ya, mediodía, ¿verdad?
Sí, bueno, pues tenemos mucho que conversar. Bienvenidos a Mangonada.
Welcome to Mangonada. Mangonada is all about exploring and reclaiming culture through outdoor movement, delivering a sweet, salty, spicy artness all in one bite.
Bueno, pues, what's been happening? What's up? You got a big smile on your face this morning.
Oh my gosh, what a night. It was a huge night for democracy, for DEI, especially for, it was the type of win that we really needed. Oh my God. I feel like we
Totally.
all really needed this.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a nationwide sense of like, okay, we do have power, we are fighting back, we are going to create change because this last year has been terrible in so many ways. But we have the political power of voting, and I feel like that's in the air right now.
I know, absolutely. I think it's been a year since elections, right? And I feel like I remember what it felt like last year, and it was just so horrifying, and we were all trying to figure out how we were going to move forward and what we were going to do. And I think things got a lot worse than we even ever envisioned. And waking up today just felt like, oh my God, folks are, with Zohran Mamdani winning the mayoral race. You have an immigrant, a Muslim, a man who, unapologetically stood up for his beliefs. It just is everything that is wrong with the establishment, everything that the Democrats have gotten wrong. It feels like this is a new beginning and a new opportunity where folks will be inspired to say, the right thing is to stand with Palestinian people. So you should do the right thing and not what's convenient. And so I feel like that's so refreshing and so reiterating the power of authenticity and that the right thing, it's always right to do the right thing, period.
I agree. Yeah, super exciting. In New York City, 2 million voters showed up, which are numbers that we haven't seen since 1969. So I think it's also just getting more people engaged. Maybe we have a lot of first-time voters. Maybe we have a lot of people realizing that local elections matter and they can make a difference is super, super exciting. And I want to see that energy continued into midterms and beyond.
Oh my God, absolutely. I think it's also telling how you have this really charismatic man that cares deeply, was out on the streets with the people, understands the city deeply, and how he actually got 40 points above on the 18 to 30-year-old men. And I just think that that is incredible and something to watch. As we see the epidemic of misogyny and of women's rights and bodily autonomy disappearing, I feel like this is like, okay, there's power, and if we change the narrative and if we stick to our belief system, really, I think is a really big thing here. I think we can win.
Yeah. So what else happened? We had some
Oh my
upsets. We had
God. So
some Democratic wins.
yes, I was super worried about New Jersey's governor race because there's a huge Trump presence in New Jersey. Last governor race, Governor Murphy won by a very small margin. And I could tell, my own kids were watching, some TV, and they kept seeing horrible ads against Mikie Sherrill. And I was concerned because, there's so much more money that has been going into the establishment to keep things the way they are. And she won. She won. She's like a Navy helicopter pilot, federal prosecutor. It's the second female leader to be in a government, in a governor seat in New Jersey. So I'm excited because so many people, New Jersey and New York are so hand in hand that a lot of people in New Jersey work in New York. And for immigration purposes, I think we really needed this one. It could have been really, really bad if I want to talk about California.
Yeah, so California Proposition 50 passed, which is a redistricting proposition basically to have more blue seats in the House of Representatives for next year. And this is a direct response to Texas also doing some redistricting or gerrymandering to basically vote out any like blue voting counties so that they will have more red seats in the House. And so California basically like did the opposite as a response.
And it passed, which is, I feel like even though we know these states generally are a lot more progressive, I feel like you know, we did not see that in the last elections. We did not see people coming out and voting. And so I think folks are, you know, you look at the type of campaign that Zora Mandani's team did, where it's innovative, it's creative, it's, and I saw a meme where it said something like, we forget the energy of a 30-some-year-old politician running a campaign versus like a dinosaur that is 1,000 years old and mm-hmm. knows nothing about culture. And it's just so refreshing to be like, oh my God, this is what it feels like to have young politicians that actually have big dreams and want to change things for the better and are not bogged down by, I don't know, if you want to be a politician, this is how you have to be, right? Mm-hmm. You have to sell your soul to the devil. And so it just feels so refreshing. And there is power in numbers, what you were saying at the beginning, Bonnie, where like this is the biggest power that we have, and it is our voting power and the power of many. Yeah. And so other big mentions, the Governor Spanberger, first female governor in Virginia, which is also huge considering how Virginia voted the last elections. Another one that for me is meaningful is Ravi Bala, outgoing Hoboken mayor, who won a General Assembly seat. And also in Detroit, Mary Sheffield is the first Black woman to win mayor of Detroit. So that was, I mean, there were so many smaller seats. I think the biggest takeaway, like I said at the beginning, is DEI won.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Huge wins. And yeah, the quote that I said earlier from Mandani was, we're turning the page on the politics that abandons the many and answers only to the few, which I love, because that's democratic socialism. That's just thinking about, you know, we're getting rid of this oligarchy and we're fighting with the collective power that we have as a mass, because there's so many of us if we all work together. So I'm excited to see what will come from that.
Yeah. And you know, I think also the fact that voters of color really came out to vote, right?
Yeah. So these are really exciting stats, because voters of color showed up for Democrats much more than they did during the presidential elections last year. New Jersey and Virginia are good examples. About 90% of Black voters voted for Sherrill and Spanberger, and the Latino vote went up by 30 points, which is, if you've explored the Latino culture at all and the identity in the politics world, it is a tough one to bite, because I think a lot of us, like a lot of our parents or our culture in general, is pretty conservative, and Latinos tend to vote pretty conservatively, even for Trump, even for systems that are harming them, which is just really hard to sit with. But I'm encouraged to see that some Latinos changed their vote this year, which is great.
Yeah, and I think one piece, I was talking with Paola Ramos, who's a journalist and has this amazing new podcast called The Moment with her dad, Jorge Ramos, who's like a celebrity journalist in Latino culture. And I was telling her how I worried about misogyny in our culture and how I wasn't sure that Mickey Sherrill would be voted in because of that, right? Like the huge misogyny in our Latino culture and just in general, how it's celebrated now if you're a racist, that you feel like you can say whatever is on your mind, where before you would be a little bit more conservative. And so like white nationalism is just out and around us. But I think that one point that has shifted in my opinion, just seeing families that I know that voted for Trump and people who are immigrants or Latinos, the separation of families and people with no records and people being taken away in court and children being placed in detention and citizens being taken, like all of these things folks are seeing and they can no longer deny. And I think when you mess with family for us in our culture, that shifts something in us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really hope that what we saw, at least in the mayoral race in the city, was, you know, the folks that showed up for Mandani, the biggest block was the Black vote. But then it was the Latino vote, and then a lot smaller margin, the Asian vote. And so I think that that is telling. Mm-hmm. I think that folks are waking up. And I think that, you know, Mandani said the city is made by immigrants, built by immigrants, run by immigrants, and now led by an immigrant. And yeah, that just brought tears to my eyes, you know, after the campaign got so ugly with, you know, they were trying to make fun of him for eating with his hands and calling him that he calls people aunties. Yeah, I mean, all my Black friends and all of my Latino friends son las tías. La tía Vanessa for my children, you know, auntie Stephanie, Uncle Femi. Like, this is just how we are. And I think it's beautiful that we are not trying to assimilate, but we are joining and bringing our beauty and our uniqueness into what is America, which is why New York works, because everybody totally. Can be whoever they want to be there and everyone's accepted.
Yeah, which in a smaller degree is also what we're trying to bring to the running world, right? I think we're trying to let running people know that we also don't have to assimilate in that sense. We don't have to like subscribe to cultural norms just because we're runners. We can bring our culture with us onto the trails and the races and all these things. So it's cool to see that it happens on so many different levels. And like, I think all of it is necessary. You need like both the really big things and the really small things to start to create that change.
100%. 100%. You know, with that, one thing that I forgot, cheering in a big marathon, what it feels like. And I lost my voice completely going to the New York City Marathon. And Vane, I was standing like four people away from these Colombian people that had a huge Colombian flag. And people were like, Colombia, Colombia. And I just screamed my heart off to That's every amazing. Single flag that I would see. I would be like, Viva Argentina, Viva El Salvador. And it was just such a, man, it was like just hope directly into your veins. Mm-hmm. Like hope and joy, and seeing all of these adaptive athletes running, and these women and pregnant women. I saw four pregnant women running, and they were just Whoa. Kicking butt. It was just, I forgot how it, like, marathon is like a religion. Marathon days is just so special in New York City.
Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, so the New York City Marathon took place this past Sunday. And it's one of the biggest marathons in the world. And we had a record-breaking marathon this year with Helen Obiri running a 2:19:51, which means she broke the course record by 2 minutes 40 seconds, which is humongous in the marathon universe. The course record, so like New York City record, it's New York City has almost 1,000 feet of elevation. So for a marathon, that's very hilly. It's not an easy race. Like, whenever folks tell me they're going to run New York City, I always tell them, New York City is a race you enjoy. It's a race you take pictures, you scream, you do high fives. It's not a PR type of race because it's so difficult. So it's impressive that this is the time that women were able to run in. Not to mention the fact that it's the second, you know, Fast Women has the best statistics out there and analysis of running for women. And she was able to share with us that this is the second year in a row where 203 women broke 3 hours.
Wow.
Which is a huge jump from the number of women that were able to break 3 hours, say 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And I have to give two shout outs. One to Jordan Whetstone, who ran a 3:16. Okay. Wow. I missed her by 5 minutes. Unbelievable. Like, she's doing events the day before, holding talks, tables, all these different things. She's raising three babies, and she did a 3:16, which is unbelievable. Running in remembrance of murdered and missing Indigenous women, especially the Indigenous girl, Pike. And so that is just incredibly meaningful, such a beautiful form of activism. And our homie, Fiona O'Keefe from PAL, this was just her second marathon, and she took fourth place, first U.S. female runner, in a 2:22:49. We met Fiona last year at a PAL conference, and she is a sweet, kind, and just cares deeply about the environment, about immigrants. So I'm really glad. I'm like really happy that she did so well.
Amazing. Yes. Great work to everyone.
Yeah. Just such the best. It's honestly like I need to remember to go out to every New York City marathon, because there's just nothing like it. And every borough brings, you know, there's like a Brazilian band, there's salsa, merengue, and it's just all the different flavors of the city you get to experience. It's really so, so special. Yeah. So
amazing. Cool. Well, I hope to go one day. I think it sounds really fun. Most of my like marathons that I've run have been completely by myself or like with one other person on the trails in the middle of nowhere. So the idea of this marathon sounds like exactly what I want.
Oh, which is really cool. It's such a different experience from the trails. It makes me want to do that marathon, that specific marathon again, because it's just crowds of people. And it's just, I just remember crying so much because you see all the adaptive runners as you run. And it's just so inspiring to see people crying while they're running. You see all these people crying and it's so emotional. And it's just so incredible. Completely different from trail, right? And I think I love both things. I love being by myself and having to be in my mind and have nobody to distract you. I just tell first-time marathoners that New York is not like every other marathon where you're by yourself on a road and you see sprinkles of people here and there, but you're by yourself for most of the time.
Right.
This is different. You're surrounded by people. You're weaving people. You're high-fiving. So you'll have to come, Bunny. Different experience, but
yes.
Similar magic.
For sure.
What is going on with you and your training, Bunny? We didn't even cover that.
I am slowing down. I feel like fall is a good time to sort of take stock of how my body's feeling and what I need to strengthen for coming winter. I've been running. It's been a mix of like snow and 14 degree weather, and then yesterday it was like sunny and 60, so things are just in transition, and I think I'm just trying to take care of my body. I've been going and doing some weight training, which is great. I've also been going to the sauna, which has been really nice to just like take care of my body. So yeah, things are
I love that.
Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think same. I think fall is always like a time, like you're saying, to sort of evaluate what's up in the horizon, what races are you choosing to do, or what type of adventures do you want to do next year. For me, I've just been kind of sick here and there because it's the pollen here is crazy. The colors are amazing in the trees. The weather's still not bad. It's like we haven't really had a 30 degree day. So when you say 14 degrees, it sends shivering down my spine, although I actually really love running in 14 degree, like in really cold weather. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's been a lot of same, like shifting. I'm doing a rebounder class that I love, like I said, and like a bunch of just weightlifting. And I've been reading and listening to a lot of podcasts on perimenopause and menopause and all these studies around hormone replacement therapy and how for women, they're realizing that starting on hormones even 10 years before perimenopause has a huge effect on your bones and your muscles and just like mental clarity. Not to mention just for us as athletes, like we have to be taking in a lot more protein and we have to be sleeping really well. And we're supposed to be, you know, if I'm in the peri to menopause bracket, I'm supposed to be really actually working out either in the like super hard high zone or the very easy zone. The middle zone is not as great because of the lack of estrogen and progesterone that I'm missing, but working with your cycle to push those boundaries. And so I'm really starting to apply that with my own athletes and with my own schedule.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that these studies are coming out. You know, they're not coming out fast enough because there's a reason why, you know, 65% of women are the inhabitants of like nursing homes. You know, there's the death rate of women versus men, but how women's health decline and their bone density is just decimated because of the lack of estrogen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the myths and you know, untruths about hormone replacement therapy. But yeah, you have a long time before you have to deal with this. I'm just like sending a high five to my girls that are entering peri or menopausal, where it's really tough. Because you really can't do the things that you want to do because your body's just like, yo, I'm missing estrogen, I'm missing progesterone. And so you really have to lift heavy and sort of change your importance of training with people that know their stuff is just cannot be highlighted enough, where we're not small men, you know, we're women. Our bones, our muscles, everything's different. And so how important that is. Yeah.
Exciting.
So now to the bad news.
The bad news
are still happening. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I want to stay in the high of the magic of the elections, but we got to continue to share the fact that we still have 3 years of this.
Yeah, things are still happening. I think starting with the government shutdown becoming the longest on record as of today, like longest ever government shutdown, not the first, not the last, but the longest. And yeah, still no signs of really a resolution. Something that has been striking to me, and I'm not a federal worker, I'm not impacted directly by the shutdown. There are little things like I go to the national park a lot and there's no park rangers anywhere. Like there's no one taking like entrance fee stations, which is fine. But I know TSA has also just been like a total nightmare. Flying has been a total nightmare because there's a bunch of like very crucial workers who are not getting paid right now. And in light of all this, ICE has been considered an essential workforce. And so ICE is not experiencing any delays or lags or any consequences, which is just classic right now.
Unbelievable. I know. It's also, you know, it's really horrific to realize how many people really depend on SNAP to survive. You know, just like your regular basic food needs for kids and moms that are single or have, you know, and I think that the narrative online and the narrative for so many years is like, oh, you're on welfare and you're not working and you don't have a job or you're not trying hard enough. And it's actually people that work at Amazon and people that work in, you know, these jobs like Walmart, McDonald's, where they're not being paid a living wage. And so Because they're not being paid a living wage, they have to have these subsidies in order to live, are actually indirectly a subsidy to the corporation, because we're essentially paying taxes to fund SNAP in order for corporations to rip off people and not pay them a living wage so that then they become dependent on this, you know, subsidy. And it just enrages me that folks shame others for needing SNAP, and there should be zero shame. I am happy to pay. I would gladly pay more if it means a mom that is trying really hard gets food, or a veteran, or someone that is disabled, or someone that had a, you know, lost a loved one and needed to take a break because the emotional wreckage is too much, or folks that are, you know, that were separated from their loved ones. Like ICE is separating and traumatizing so many children. Like what is, you know, I don't think we talk enough about those families that are being ripped apart, where you have maybe a citizen wife and a husband who is undocumented and got deported or is detained. And that mom, like this family depends on both incomes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think, and part of, I think like one of the worst parts for me about ICE is their strategy to dismantle nuclear homes and take stability away by incarcerating men and fathers, and they do that on purpose. And there's like a strategy, and I remember reading about this when I was in college, about the prison to deportation pipeline and all of these things, where it's like we as a country and ICE as an agency is actively destabilizing homes to create situations in which people are desperate and in need and do things like steal or get into trouble or whatever it might be. And it's a response to a system that is failing them because they're not able to have the resources and stability that like normal white kids would have, for example. And then it just perpetuates the stereotype of like, well, brown people are criminals and they're dangerous for our communities and X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no, they're just responding to us taking away their opportunities to have healthy, stable lives. And it's no one's fault except the system, and it's totally on purpose. And it's just like, it's so infuriating to me. And then, yeah, people are like, well, immigrants are lazy and they rely on bailouts and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, you're not giving them any other options. You're putting them in this box.
Yeah, 100%. And I think also, I'm sorry, but you can't really say immigrants are lazy. You know, immigrants are trying so hard. And the reason why they are not legal is because the system was built that way and there's no line to be made, right? What is astonishing to me also is that Trump is not even close to breaking Obama's record on people being deported, because the goal is different, right? The goal is to detain people and use them for work. I think that's the ultimate goal, right? And it is, like you're saying, to break families, make them want to have to leave, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's when you have 20% of the country is Latino and you're saying racial profiling is okay while you're protecting agents by allowing them to wear masks, you know, there's no accountability. And ultimately, it corrodes that constitutional accountability, which is what our democracy is all about. And so, you know, I think it's insane that you go online and you have, you know, the government saying no U.S. citizens have been detained, when ProPublica did a study and over 170 citizens have been detained for 24 hours to 3 days. And regardless of how senseless and lawlessness, the sense of lawlessness exists, you have the right to not be detained. And there has to be a reason for you to be detained. There's due process doesn't just disappear because we have all of a sudden fascism in this country. And so I think that checking, making sure that what you're reading and what you're seeing online is true and real is important. I find myself being less and less on platforms. And because there's so many bots, there's so much AI that is fake, and it is helping this narrative that is not true, right? All these lies, nobody's checking on whether people, and the government itself is lying to us. So it's like, who do you trust, right? When you're seeing it with your own eyes. And so it's crazy that this is the longest, again, as you're saying, like we started talking about, you know, we went back to ICE, but that, you know, government shut down and it's still not the main thing we're talking about because there's so much going on.
Totally. And I don't think it's hard to comprehend what a government shutdown means and the impact it has on, like, not only communities, but also like public lands, climate change, all of the work that we're trying to do and how it's impacted. And these are the systems that are like the first to be impacted, the first to be hurt. And we're just like setting ourselves so much further back. We're already so understaffed and underfunded because we're not allowed to invest in climate change research. We're not allowed to do all of these things. For example, national parks there's no one taking care of them. There's no one to be like land management or stewards because all of the employees are furloughed. And then you have like people still going to national parks and even things like the bathrooms, you know, like there's no one to like replace the toilet paper. And so it's just a good reminder of how fragile these ecosystems are when they don't have the resources needed to like manage them. And that's what's currently happening with public lands as well.
Yeah. And with something as simple as that, right? But then you go to TSA, you go to, you know, just the impact on our friends, right? Like our friends that are researchers, our friends that work for the government, our friends that are labor representatives, all of these folks that are just kind of waiting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the stress that causes on a family emotionally, but also economically. It's like, you know, I think it's just really, really hard right now when, you know, I talk with my athletes a lot about stress and how stress is stress is stress. And then you have this added stress above all the other stressors. And it's hard to function as human beings, you know, when also ultimately, I think the biggest talking point should be, you know, drilling and mining being allowed in Alaska, you know, in lands that need to be untouched, right? Mm-hmm. And lands that are untouched for a reason. And the lack of recognizing and seeing the bigger picture, as you're saying, where it starts with the replacement of toilet paper, but it goes to all the way to cancer research, all the way to accessibility, you know, like our town, the response of our fire department, our police, and all of it is an ecosystem that that can't be furloughed for long, right? And we haven't seen the true effects of a shutdown longer than this. So it will be, I hope something happens, but it's not good.
Yeah, it's also just like the amount of cognitive dissonance for me where it's like, okay, a Republican president with a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate and the largest government shutdown in history, but we're blaming the Democrats. And I know, yeah. I know it's like, don't get caught up in it, but it just makes me mad.
Yeah. I mean, as it should, right? I mean, I think as it should, but it's like, it's storytelling, right? How do you tell the story and who's listening and who has the power of the media? Who's got the power of social media channels? Like, all of a sudden I'm getting all this like anti-Mandami, anti-Democrat, anti-climate right. change, anti-stuff of people that I don't really follow, but it's all like the propaganda and it's all bots. And so, right? And so that becomes sort of like the reality of like, wait, are these people, is this really like what's happening?
Yeah.
And so I think it's really, you know, we have to shift. We have to continue to believe that a better world can exist, right? I think that's where coming together with people from Protect Our Winters, like us coming together and talking about these things and others, is important and is what keeps us imagining that things can get better and will get better. And so I feel like it's important to sort of stay with the energy of, wow, folks really showed up and believe that democracy is something that still exists in this country and that is worth fighting for and that we have to fight for, and everybody has a role to play. And so while all these other things are terrifying and horrible, I feel like it's important to hold on to that hope.
Yeah. I, on those lines, feel like we have some more ICE updates to share, which are, I think it's important to keep our attention there and keep reading them, even though they are hard to read, because even as good things are happening, and I feel, and I hate that I feel this way, but even this morning reading the news about all the Democratic wins, I sort of felt this weight in my chest of like, oh my gosh, like, are Democrats, are white liberals going to relax because we're quote unquote winning and they don't need to care as much anymore? And it's like, I'm like, are we going to regress to like a Biden era level of complacency where white liberals just like don't really care what's happening if it's not affecting them? And on that note, like in Durango, for example, last week, a father was detained with his two children who are all under legal status in the US. They are all like under a legal process. And it was a 12-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son. And they were taken by ICE. And the community just like went totally like up in arms. Like, you don't get to take our children. Where are they? We didn't know where they were for a while. I don't believe they've been released yet. But just some really, really heavy stuff. And then I saw a video and I fact check this after because it's also important to fact check. 2 days ago in Chicago, a woman was driving to work. Her name is Diane Figueroa, and she was driving to work after grabbing a coffee, and she was literally like hit by an ICE car because she was in her car and their car just like hit her car in order to make her stop, and then proceeded to, in broad daylight, drag her out of her car, all while brandishing weapons. And this was like on the streets in the middle of the day. Everyone was recording. Everyone was like, what's happening? This woman is a citizen. She's a US citizen. And she was eventually released with no charges. But why? Like, the fact that that's happening in broad daylight on our streets to US citizens, like, this is, the alarm has been sounding for a long time. Like, this is really, really scary stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think the place that has been hit the hardest, where there's just absolutely no breath of like rest, is for people in Chicago. You know, we also had 2 weeks ago a member of the DW running racing team, a 67-year-old man, was coming home, and there were National Guard like ICE people stopped, and they stopped him. There was about to be a Halloween parade in the corner, so kids were out, parents were out, everybody was out, and they were picking up someone in a house, a man that has been living in the U.S. since he was 4 years old. And yes, people, as an immigration lawyer, I can tell you that there are people that were here from the age of 2 to 4 to 5 to 6 that did not qualify to certain benefits because they are very specific. And it doesn't mean that they have a criminal record. It just means that they fall in certain categories where they could not legalize, because the system is built to create these shadow groups of people that can be exploited so that our economy can run. mm-hmm. at cheaper costs, and so that the rich get richer. And so this man was actually taken out of his car, dragged down. And I think I was talking with a bunch of other runners, the runner Peter Bromka. And the thing that really shocked him was seeing this white man in his 60s on the floor with three agents on top of him. And this man wearing stuff like Tracksmith and Adidas Adios Pro, which is like all of a sudden you see yourself in this person because these are the things that you buy. These are the things that you do. You just came from a long run on a Sunday and you have three broken ribs and internal bleeding as a result of the government like preventing you from getting home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's shocking, right? I think it's you never think it's going to happen to yourself. It's never going to happen to my family. It's not going to happen to me. And then it happens to someone close to you or that resembles traits that remind you of yourself. And I think mm-hmm. that's when folks begin to realize that, listen, they're coming for all of us. They're not just coming for the brown people because they don't care. They do not care. They said they cared about our legality. That was irrelevant. They care about our color. They care about our accent. That's how they're profiling, but they're going to take anybody that gets in the way. And so I think that was just really, and again, Bunny, for you and I, we've been seeing this for years, right? Folks come to me and they're like, can you believe that they're doing this in detention centers and they're charging them for calls? And I'm like, yes, this has been happening this whole time. It's just now amplified and folks are taking video and people are showing, it's like amplified, right? But this has been happening all along. This is why we close our doors. This is why, I founded Touching Land so that I could teach people their rights.
Yeah.
And so it's important to continue to share these things because the more that it happens, the closer that it gets to us. I mean, I saw someone I know posting about her daycare and how ICE went into the daycare and dragged a woman out of the daycare. And this is a daycare mm-hmm. where this friend took her kids to school. And yeah. So it's, I think everyone has to get involved. And I hope that they draw inspiration from the elections, specifically from the Working Families Party and the way that they run, because it's going to take all of us to stand up and show up for our communities.
Yeah. I agree. So yeah, let's find a way to keep this energy going. I think it's like, it's good to celebrate the wins. It's good to feel hopeful, but don't stay there. Keep going because we have, so much damage has been done in the past I don't know how many years, it's a long time game. And I think we have to think of long-term solutions, not just like short ones. So yeah, I encourage folks to find whichever ways to tune into creating some sort of like stability and sustainability in this work because we're in it for the long run, just like an ultra.
A lot, yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it's like an ultra, right? You get that hit of the gel and it's like, yeah, I'm jamming, but you got a long way to go. And so that gel isn't going to last long. So you need to just make sure that you're taking the electrolytes, you're doing all the other things. And just like that, check in with your community, like do the uncomfortable things, like, and stand up when it's important. I think that's the thing that really resonated with me, which I've mentioned a million times already, but it's the, when something feels wrong in your intuition, to speak up, even if everyone's telling you, oh no, you could lose your job, or they could do this, or they could attack you, or they could come after you. And it's like, I'm exercising my right to free speech and mm-hmm. this is the right thing to do. Standing up for immigrants is the right thing to do, period.
Period.
Yeah. Period.
Okay. Well, yeah, with that, how are you carrying this energy into your training, your work, your life in this next week?
Well, I've been trying to write a lot to get all of the work that I've been doing all these years, with somatic legal education really sort of in writing, which is hard for me. But I think running and doing the rebounder has been really useful, just like to process things. I think it's been super exciting to see the last couple of races like Javelina and seeing new faces come into the jam, and folks that I'm excited about the longer length races, 200s to somethings, and seeing how women are just smashing those races. So I'm excited about the possibilities. I'm excited about the amount of folks of color running Javelina and just Latina women rocking it out there. I'm excited for the new season. We'll see. We've got lotteries coming up, Vane, for Hard Rock, for Western States, for a bunch of other races. And so I think a lot of us are kind of waiting for those lotteries to come out so that we can make a decision on what races to do next year, because I'm definitely antsy about like what the year is going to look like. But I'm excited. You know, I think that we have to look at everything as an opportunity. And so I'm scared of what, you know, our future holds as a country, but I'm hopeful and I'm seeing the darkness as more possibility and less like fear. How about you?
Yeah, I love that, like, seeing the darkness, embracing the darkness. I feel literally like there's not that much sunlight in these next few weeks, and so embracing the darkness in all these different ways. But I think I'm like scared to say it out loud, but I think that my tendonitis is finally healing because I finally rested. And so I've been on a few longer run, like a 7 mile run with like 2,000 feet of vert, and I like felt pretty good after. And so I'm really looking forward to sort of hitting this reset button with my feet and my tendons and just training a lot smarter this coming year, maintaining my running form throughout the winter, which is sometimes really hard when there's a lot of snow on the ground. And then yeah, I think picking a race that is a little later in the season and training for that, because it was a hard summer for me, not being able to run, not being able to like regulate how I wanted to. So I'm hoping to be much smarter this year and have a stronger season.
Yeah, and less aggressive salsa dancing.
Right. Yeah, I did go out. I went salsa dancing until 2 a.m. last weekend for Halloween, and we were also dancing reggaeton. I was throwing it down and my knees kept up. I did not dislocate any body parts. So I'm feeling healthy and strong.
I love that. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah. Keeping the joy. You know, I think these months for me are a lot about, I love running because there's nobody out. And so for me, it's like, I love running in the icy and in the cold and in the snow because it's so quiet. And so I love that, but it does get dark and I'm like, we have to go to bed, kids. And it's like 5:30. I'm like, well, maybe we can stay up a little more. But yeah, I think just keeping it cool during that time is important. All right, Amazing. Bonnie. Yeah.
Ya suficiente a la próxima. Okay. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Adios.
Bye.